Oh, hey, this is, I'm Tommy Wiseau from The Room, of course, and you are listening to the long and late movie show, American's Movie Podcast. So listen well, because the guy is good. Maybe he's good, but he's not, but you send him an email, okay? And by the way, see The Room. Okie dokie, bye.
Coming to you live from Madison Square Garden, this is the Long and Late Movie Show, America's Movie Podcast. I am Russell Hainline, a.k.a. Frank Longo, and I am joined as always by my partner in crime, Mr. Leighton Gordon. Good evening, Leighton.
Good evening, Russell. It's good to be here. How are you doing?
Doing well. Should I say ho-ho-ho, Leighton?
Ho-ho-ho, yes. Yes, exactly.
Not only because we are entering the Christmas season, but because Leighton was a proud participant in SantaCon this year.
SantaCon 2012, it was my first time. My brother went last year. He had a great time. So we went this year, and we had a pretty good time also.
Yeah. Did you pick up some ho-ho-hos?
No. But there was a guy who was wearing a ho-ho-ho chain, pink chain. It was very funny. It was very funny.
Very nice.
We played a lot of beer pong. I won a couple games. Lost a couple also. It was very disappointing there. But
those are the two possible outcomes.
Yeah. I won as many as I lost, so I felt good about that. And I got very drunk, and it was from about 12 p.m. to about 5 p.m., so I was five hours of solid drinking. It's good. It's a good feeling.
For those of you that would like to see Leighton Claus, that is now the background on the new Long and Late Movie Show Twitter page, check that out on your iPhones. It's currently the background on iPhone Twitter. I'm going to do my best to make sure it is the background on regular Twitter before the end of the day. We also have back this week, she left us for a week, but she did not leave our hearts, the wonderful and talented Shira Selkowitz. Good evening, Shira.
Good evening, Russell and Leighton. And I really missed you guys last week. And I'm sorry I didn't get to go to SantaCon, but I was very drunk. With some new friends. So
did you go to you were at Moses Con?
I was at Moses Con. Oh my god, it's spelled K-A-H-N.
Nice.
And it was a blast.
Try to get some dudes to part your Red Sea, if you know what I'm saying.
Ayo.
Actually, that sounds terrible. That sounds gross and awful if you put it that way. Yeah, so that's not good. We've also got a lovely additional guest this week. We had him at the very beginning of the year. He's almost one of our first guests. You may know him as Marcus the Token on Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, Marcus Strickland. Good evening, Marcus.
Good evening, everyone.
Hey.
Now Marcus, what have
Hi,
you
Marcus.
Been...
Hi, Marcus.
Hello.
What have you been up to since you were last on the show, which I think was like January?
Actually, you're wrong. I was on here. We talked about Paranorman.
What?
I think
that
it was
happen.
August or September.
Well, shiver me timbers. I can't believe that I forgot about that. I do remember you being on as one of our first guests, though. I'm not mistaken about that.
No, you're not mistaken at all.
Excellent. Well, what have you done since Paranorman? Anything exciting?
I've been writing, and I'm starting my production company, starting a mini-series in conjunction with Nerf, a Nerf War mini-series. So that's the thing I've been working on tirelessly for the last 4 months, and we start shooting next month.
Start shooting?
Yeah, it should be fun.
Nerf
About
joke.
100 screaming kids, so yeah. Awesome.
That sounds great. I have Triscuits in my mouth.
That's the euphemism, folks.
I wanted more Nerf information. I thought it was safe to get a Triscuit in there. This show brought to you by Triscuits. Triscuits.
That's one of our sponsors.
Yeah. May help reduce the risk of heart disease. Triscuits. All right. Wonderful bit to have you back, Marcus.
Thank you. Wonderful to be back.
Let's go ahead and jump right into some reviews this week. I've got two that I'm going to hit real fast. I'm going to have reviews up on my website shortly. I think I already have Rust and Bone. That's the first one I have. The Marion Cotillard getting her legs eaten by a killer whale. But it's not as awesome as that throughout. That sound, that makes it sound like it's really, really awesome.
Yeah, it does.
But no, it's actually a very good adult drama and well acted. It's a bit predictable, but it's totally solid. The performances make it worthwhile, and it's very well filmed. Anyone who saw A Prophet a couple of years ago, it's not as good as A Prophet, but it's still gorgeous. I gave it 3 out of 4 kernels. So,
what language is this movie in?
The language is French. Shiro, what was your question?
Well, I was asking, you said you gave it 3 out of 4 kernels, correct?
Correct.
But that's good.
That is good. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with the movie, and in fact, it's well made and it's very well acted. It's just a little predictable, which keeps it from escalating past that. But it's
past a 3, okay.
Right, it's a strong adult drama, nothing wrong with it. Just it never excels past that.
Can you tell me a little bit about the movie? Just a quick, overview without going too deep. What is this movie about?
It's mostly about a man who Ali, who works kind of security and bouncers. He's a big guy. He used to fight, and he's got a young kid, and he meets one night Marion Cotillard, who works at Marineland as part of the Killer Whale show. And she suffers an accident, and he's sort of struggling on his own. It becomes one of these things where she's physically damaged and he's emotionally damaged. You know, so there's like a parallel kind of.
Okay.
And
okay.
So even though she's not whole and he's whole, he's not really whole on the inside. It's that kind of thing.
Got it.
So then we sort of see their relationship and... you know, he starts fighting, and she sort of kind of becomes his like manager while he's fighting. You know, she tries to find something to do with her life because she can't, she can't do killer whale shit anymore. So yeah, I mean, by the way, this is the least articulate way to describe this movie. I mean.
Did you write a review? I'll have to go read it.
I did. I wrote a short review. It's on the password of swordfish.com. I believe that one is already up. Rust and Bone should already be up. The other one I saw was Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning. The new Universal Soldier movie. To give the briefest of overviews there, a man, the actor I don't recognize, his wife and child are killed. And he starts having these visions where he sees Jean-Claude Van Damme in his head.
Boy.
And he realizes that, or rather we begin to realize that there is a sort of Colonel Kurtz in Apocalypse Now sort of uprising being planned by Jean-Claude Van Damme as... the Colonel Kurtz of these former, currently liberated Universal Soldiers. And so we realize pretty quickly that the main dude has some tie to the Universal Soldier program. And so while he's trying to hunt down Jean-Claude Van Damme because Van Damme killed his wife and kid, he begins to learn more about this seedy underground, you know, again, like Martin Sheen's journey down the river on in Apocalypse Now, this main character does here. The comparisons are fairly clear. In fact, even Jean-Claude Van Damme has his like head shaved and his face painted in the last fight scene to make him just a really clearly weird Brando character. but it's actually pretty good. It starts really slow, but then some fight scenes start. The main character starts to realize his powers. And there was a fight scene in a sporting goods store that was really great that involved, like, throwing bowling balls at each other and weights, you know, just whole, like, dumbbells at one another. That was kind of fun. So, I mean, if you can get through the first, like, 30 to 40 minutes, which are pretty slow, then you can enjoy the rest of it. I will say it's pretty low budget, so don't expect...
You're kidding.
Don't expect the I know. Don't expect the quality of, like, the Expendables 2 in terms of how it looks. You know what I mean? It looks pretty cheap, but it's enjoyable. So I gave it I'm gonna give it 2.5 out of 4.
That is a lot better than I would expect.
Yeah, me really.
Too. Same here.
That's more than I would give the first Universal Soldier.
and that's a classic, right?
No, the first Universal Soldier is not a classic in my book. It's also dreadfully slow.
I've definitely never seen it. Marcus, have you seen it?
The first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was like 10.
And did you like it when you were 10?
I liked action movies, so yes, I did.
So yes.
Yeah, that's unfair. Everybody likes everything when they're 10.
That's
weird.
True. I pretty much liked everything when I was 10.
Didn't we talk before about what's the first movie you realized that you didn't like?
Oh my god, what a great question. I don't remember talking about it. That's awesome.
Because I just remember Batman and Robin leaving the theater and going like, that was pretty good. And like when you're like 13 or however old I was when that came out, you know, that's just the worst condemnation you could possibly give a movie. Anyway, listeners, you can think about that. The first movie you realize is bad. Hashtag first bad movie.
Tweet to us.
Hashtag Triscuits.
Hashtag sponsored by.
Indeed. I tried for a while to get Triscuits to sponsor at Frank Longo on Twitter. And
they're not having it?
Yeah, they never responded. Their Twitter person is terrible.
That's a shame.
I know. I could be their Twitter person. Triscuits, if you're listening, I've eaten more Triscuits than anyone else in America. That's not an exaggeration.
So. I actually am not even going to argue it because I believe you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's no joke. I buy them in bulk. But anyway, Universal Soldier, 2.5 out of 4. Shira, you saw a movie called Price Check.
Price Check, yes.
This is this Parker Posey?
It absolutely is.
I love Parker Posey.
You should see this movie.
Describe it, yeah. Because all I know is Parker Posey's in it.
Yeah, she's definitely in it, and she's the main character in it. I believe it's playing at IFC in New York right now, Leighton. But you can also get it on iTunes right now, even though it's still in theaters. So it's actually a really good movie. It's an independent film, and it's basically like... To sum it up in theme, I guess, it's a snapshot of the or a story about the things that lead us to make the sacrifices we make in life, and like how we get to sell out and not follow our dreams, and how we get stuck in jobs we don't really like, and how all these circumstances turn our lives into something that we don't really want. And basically, Parker Posey is this high-powered supermarket marketing genius, and I don't really know. I don't want to say too much about it, but it's just a really, really good movie. I was really surprised by it. Is anyone there?
Yeah. Where
yes,
are
yes, yes.
We were enraptured by that detailed description of the film.
Yeah, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, Parker Posey is fantastic. I love her in everything.
Me too.
She can basically do no wrong. I don't know. It's just a really nice look at what happens to people. You know, whether it be marriage or kids or not having enough money or, you know, just taking a job because you need it and then ending up in it your whole life. It's kind of bleak, but kind of true, too.
Is that the metaphorical price check?
Yeah. And it's done well. I mean, it's not cheesy at all.
Are there any other actors that we would recognize?
Yeah, so the other woman in it who plays the wife of Eric Mabius is the guy in it. I believe that's how you pronounce his name.
Of the strip?
What?
Or is that Mobius? Never mind. Keep going.
Eric Mabius was on like Ugly Betty. If you ever watched Ugly Betty.
Nope.
Yes, I watched Ugly Betty the first season.
You would recognize him. You would recognize him if you saw him. And then his wife in the movie is played by Annie Parisi, and she has been in a bunch of stuff. I'm trying to think. Nothing huge. That's the problem. But everybody, I mean, Parker Posey's by far the most famous person in it. It's just really good. Go see it if you can, or rent it on iTunes, better yet. It was definitely worth the $6.95 or whatever.
That's cheaper than a theater.
Yeah, exactly.
Much cheaper.
It's true. So how many kernels?
I'd give it three. I'm going to give it 3.5 kernels.
Wow, that's a.
I really enjoyed it. And, you know, maybe it's because, like, I've kind of recently been at a crossroads in my life with my job. But even more than that, I think it's just, like, do you ever see someone and you're like, for example, the guy in the movie, his name is Pete Cozy in the movie. And he used to be in the music industry and it, like, wasn't paying the bills. So he ended up in this job that he hated. And it's like, how many people do you know that, like, even you, Russell, look at you, like, following your dream. So many people wouldn't do that.
I had a price check.
You had a price check. Snap.
Did
someone fall out of their chair?
Yeah, Marcus did.
Oh, yeah, all the time. I'm clumsy.
I was about to say something happened. Do they play the song Price Tags?
No, but there's actually good music in the movie.
Fair enough. Nashira, you also saw Queen of Versailles, yes?
I did see Queen of Versailles as well. And you saw it too, right?
That I did. Talk about Queen of Versailles, Shira.
I really thought it was going in a completely different direction, which I guess is, I say that about every documentary. It's almost like stupid that I keep making that comment because the documentary is never really about what they set out to make it. It's about this, for those of you who are not familiar, it's about this very wealthy family in Orlando, Florida. This guy, David Siegel, who is an investor in timeshare properties. And he really just got totally screwed over by I wouldn't say screwed over. He was a victim of the whole economic collapse and the mortgage crisis and that whole thing. But he's also a victim of just, I think, bad planning and not about anything, and he was so wealthy and he was building the largest house in America and he didn't have any worries and he never cared about anything, really. He never had a care in the world. And all of a sudden this hits and he's yelling at everybody for turning lights off in his house. It's like
yeah. To say he's a victim is a bit of a stretch.
I didn't even mean to use the word victim because I corrected myself from saying perfect. He's definitely not a victim. He
takes advantage of the fact that banks were so willing to give him big loans and give him, you know, money. Rates, and they just poured money like over him at all times. And because he thought the money would keep coming, he just figured, the hell do I have to lose? I'm just going to keep accepting all this money from the banks.
Exactly. And it got to the point where that trickled down even to his wife, who was like, well, I can just hire more nannies. I'll just keep having more kids. She gave birth to 7 children.
Damn.
Like, it was every single facet of their life was in excess and so oblivious to reality.
So what did you think of the movie?
You know, it's not my favorite documentary. I thought the story was really fascinating, but I don't know. I don't really like the way that the movie was done because I don't know that ultimately. I mean, it did give a nice sort of perspective on the quote unquote American dream, but I don't know. It was a little boring in parts.
Oh man, I don't know if I would go to boring. It definitely made me sad. It made me very unspeakably sad, not for these like particular people, but just that they are sort of symptomatic of this larger problem that clearly goes past the American dream. You know, like, I think they even say at one point in the movie something along the lines of, you know, if you're not rich, then you want to feel rich. And if you don't want to feel rich, then you're dead.
Yeah. You know,
that's like the way the guy puts it. And so it just shows that everybody wants excess. You know, right. Everybody does. And even I thought that the subplot about the girl, about the wife's friend back in Iowa or wherever, and the juxtaposition between her situation and then the situation of the seagulls was totally fascinating. Her friend is having default on her mortgage payment or something?
Into foreclosure, and this wealthy wife of David Siegel sent her $5,000 to try to save the home, and it didn't work. But it was just like, and I love how they interviewed the woman, and she's like, I mean, I guess, to say that I'm not jealous of the way Jackie's life turns out would be true. And it's like, no, you're pissed. Like, how could you not be pissed?
Well, I didn't even feel like she was entirely pissed. I felt that she was more pissed, not that she didn't have all of these things. It really felt more like she was pissed that she was watching her friend act like a asshole.
I definitely saw an element of that, but I guess that's partly true because she was also like, I would love to have a lot, but not that much.
Right. Yeah, right. She was like, yeah, I don't want all of those things. And then they immediately follow it with a title screen like, her house went into foreclosure. Oh God, just devastating stuff.
And there was like almost the other thing that really struck me was there really wasn't any love in that family at all.
It struggled. The love story. I felt like she was giving it. She was giving it in every way that she knew how.
She knew how, exactly. It was all very surface and very superficial. But she was, you know, in her way, she was trying.
But even that, even like her big gesture to like hold to when a couple of their hotels closed or whatever, she took a lot of the surplus supplies and held like a big like charity giveaway to people of all of these supplies when really they could have just like sold them for more money. I mean, like I was sitting there going like these people need money. Like she doesn't need to be having a gigantic charity giveaway right now.
But get it. That's the like thing. Like when she went to rent the car at Hertz, and she was like, "What's my driver's name?" stared at her.
This was the type of movie where you laugh, and then immediately afterwards, you like groan and shake your head, and you feel bad inside. I mean, it's really, really interesting. I was definitely compelled the whole time. I agree. I mean, it's not as good as something like The Imposter. I mean, it doesn't really have like a narrative in that sense. It's just sort of a portrait of what is wrong with us, you know, at least in regards to what was wrong with us before everything went to hell, you know, economically speaking.
When they started to actually hear the filmmaker or whatever, the interviewer asking the questions towards the end.
Right.
I thought that was nice, and even David Siegel was like, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, he was – God, and when he admitted on camera that his marriage gave him, like, no happiness, and it was like having another child to take care of.
That was grim.
Oh, my God. It was so rough. So I was definitely fascinated by this story and this couple.
It's worth watching, I think.
I'd give it a good 3.
Give it three as well.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, then let's move on to the big money show of the week, and that's The Hobbit. Shira did not see The Hobbit, but Leighton and Marcus, you both did.
I can't wait to see it.
Did you guys see it? First of all, did you see it in 3D?
Yes.
Yes.
Second of all, did you see it in the high frame rate?
Yes.
What about
nice.
You, Russell?
Okay. All right, let's start, Marcus, let's start with you. You are our guest, after all. Your thoughts on both the movie and the high frame rate 3D presentation?
Well, I'll start with the high frame rate. I was actually quite impressed with the frame rate. It kind of looked like a Blu-ray, but on the big screen. And I thought it was just fantastic. I don't know. I was kind of worried, you know, with just such a dramatic difference. But I mean, unless you're really looking for it, you really don't notice. I think Peter did a very good job with it overall, you know, something new, something different, and not really making it an issue. But I think it kind of added to the visual aspect of The Hobbit, just based on the fact that it's such a visual movie. But overall, I thought the movie was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. There were some parts that really reminded me exactly of, you know, The Lord of the Rings. There were actually a lot of parallels from, you know, just the first three movies to this one. Looked like some of the same, you know, parts could be interchanged. Like you could take the mountain scene and, you know, up to certain parts, you could add it into the next movie. You know, one of the mountain scenes from, The Two Towers. And it was, overall, I thought it was great, but there was, you know, just a few small parts that I was just like, oh, you know, I can see that. That looks very familiar, or, you know, it works, but I really liked it. I'm probably going to see it again.
Leighton, your thoughts on the high frame rate?
I thought the high frame rate was fantastic. I think it's, you know, the best part about it was that it made the 3D look. I don't know if it made the 3D look better, but the 3D in this was fantastic.
Made the 3D look better.
Can you guys can you educate me really quickly, and maybe for the one or two people that doesn't know what you're talking about that are listening, about higher frame rate?
Frame rate typically for movie is 24 frames per second, which means that for every second that you're watching something, you know how what a film looks like?
It
passes between the frame, the lens, 24 times. So that one second is just 24. It gives it that authentic film look.
I got you. Thank you.
What this looks like, it looks like more real. You know how camera has that camera film quality to it? This makes it seem as though you're... I don't know, like it's a documentary or something. Like, I don't know like it's a documentary that you're watching.
The big difference, Shira, at least for me, is when you're watching things like an open flame or running water.
Okay.
Because when you're watching it in 24 frames per second, there's essentially blurring that happens because the water or the flame are flickering or moving faster than 24 frames per second can capture in vivid detail. Okay. So that's why when you see like a candle in, you know, a movie, in a regular 24 frame per second movie, it just sort of looks like that blurry light. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Whereas in 48 frames per second, the first image of the movie is really a candle, and you can see all the colors. You can see it dancing like constantly. You know, when the person moves with the candle, like you see sort of the strain of the air against the flame. You know, when you get to Rivendell and you see all the waterfalls, I mean, you see every little drop.
Yeah.
You can't not look at it. You can't not notice it. And so, yeah, it looks even different than a documentary. It looks even different. It looks different from a documentary, because a documentary is still usually 24 frames per second. You know, like, it looks like...
Yeah.
There's nothing to describe it, how it looks. It looks like sort of hyper-real, real life. Like, it looks like you're... It really does sort of capture the majesty of if you're looking at something insanely gorgeous in real life, and you're sort of, like, turning your head and capturing all the visuals, and you're sitting there going, like, I couldn't take a picture of this and capture it. Like, 48 frames per second, the goal of it is to do just that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Anyway. Thanks, guys. Leighton, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Leighton. Thank you.
No problem. I will say that for the first time, I've seen a lot of 3D movies in 3D, and I think this was the first time I ever had slight issues watching it. I don't know if it was the glasses or not, but maybe it's the length of the movie also, but I was very uncomfortable at times watching it. I don't know what was going on. I didn't feel sick or anything like some people did, but my eyes were just kind of off while watching it. I don't know. Did you guys feel that way? Or was it fine for you guys?
I felt at the end of the movie like... when I left the theater, I did feel almost, I don't want to say overstimulated, like it's a bad thing, but I did feel like almost like my eyes were tired because I had just sort of experienced so much that was so vivid in front of my eyes, like constantly mm-hmm. for 3 hours. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I left maybe with like a mild headache, but nothing like during the movie. There weren't like specific scenes where I was going like, or whatever.
No. There's nothing like that for me. Okay. But let's a couple more things on high frame rate. I'll say it makes the real characters look great, but I kind of feel that some of the fake characters just stuck out more. I think, I don't know if Gollum really worked well for me. I don't know if the Troll King worked well, blended well
the
with
Goblin
the other guys.
King,
I'm sorry, the Goblin King. The Goblin King worked well for me. But I did think that the big battle scene, the big Goblin battle scene, was just fantastic. It was shot well. It looked fantastic. But the CG with the real life is still like an issue. It's still sort of an issue. But to go into the movie, first of all, this movie is too long. It feels very long. It takes a little bit too long to get going. I think that they forced in an Elijah Wood cameo into the movie. I think that I don't like the arc of the movie personally. In that I don't feel that this is a I know that this is a trilogy, but I think that this movie should be able to stand on its own as a movie, and I don't think it does because it doesn't have an arc that I really liked. It doesn't have that kind of journey. It kind of ends before that big battle that I was kind of expecting with the white orc guy. The great orc guy, and I was left kind of unsatisfied with the overall story of the first movie. So I wish they had tightened that up. Ended the arc with the white orc, but so I was kind of left disappointed in the overall story told here.
God damn it! I had another Triscuit in my mouth. a delicious, tasty, wonderful Triscuit.
Thought is brought to you by Triscuit.
That's right. When you eat Triscuits, it's not an unexpected journey to deliciousness. I don't know. I tried. First of all, the high frame rate. I really wanted to have somebody on who hated it because a lot of people are really hating it, and I did not understand why at all. I also thought it was great. I also didn't want to bring in somebody who hated it because I didn't want them to feel trapped by me. Like I was on a show before where I would gladly go on again. I don't think they like meant anything by it, but I went on to defend a movie that I think everybody there didn't like. You know what I mean? So I immediately felt like, oh no, like the walls are closing in. I didn't want anybody to come on and feel that way about high frame rate. I'd love to discuss it with someone, but the fact is you're just fucking wrong if you think high frame rate is terrible. You're just wrong.
Now, the success of it, it's gonna spread.
There's no question it's gonna spread.
I don't know why like Avatar wasn't done like this before, because it would make Avatar look even better.
Yeah.
Well, because it takes fucking brass balls to do this, to change what has been established literally since like the beginning of cinema, you know, maybe like really, really early cinema wasn't 24, but it's been 24 for a long, long time. And to change that, I think that's why people are so upset, because it looks different. And so they're like, oh no, I can't. I mean, we've seen it time and time again in cinema with sort of technological advancements. You know, you saw it with the addition of sound. You saw it with the addition of color. You saw it with the addition of 3D. You know, there's always hesitation. And just like with sound and color and 3D, I think in the right artistic context, there's no question that high frame rate has its place among this medium. There's no question. I mean, I thought it looked brilliant. The Stone Giants fight sequence.
Fantastic.
I don't know that I've ever felt like that watching a movie. Like, I honestly was I felt my pulse quicken because I'm sitting there late, and I have to disagree with you about the interaction between the CGI and the humans. I was sitting there, and it felt hyper-real, like sort of documentary, but not. Like, it felt that way while I was watching two giant stone creatures with human beings running around on top of them, like, fighting one another. And it blew me away. My mind was, like, trying to figure out how this was possible. You know what I mean? Like, the Stone yeah. Giant sequence, the Goblin sequence. And also, I thought the CGI characters were brilliant. I thought the CGI characters were even better than the human characters in terms of how they looked. You know, some of the human characters, like, you could tell at times Martin Freeman's ears were prosthetics.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell some of these things on occasion. Whereas the CG characters, they popped. They had so much detail. They were framed beautifully for the 3D. The interaction, I thought, with maybe a couple of exceptions, was really top-notch. I thought Gollum, like, in the water was unreal. I thought Gollum in the water, again, I'm sitting there going, how is this possible? Like, when he's, like, splashing around. Because, again, you're seeing every little drop of that water interacting with a CGI character. How do they do it?
Yep.
I couldn't. I was blown away by the high frame rate. And I really thought the movie was great also. I didn't feel the bloat that a lot of people are feeling. Like, do I understand that the beginning is slow? Yes. You know, the other movies have pretty slow beginnings also. You know, like, and really the only scene that, like, really lagged for me, yeah, the Elijah Wood cameo, unnecessary. Sure. I get that. But it's, you know, that's like really 2 minutes of a 3-hour movie. You know, like, I had no problem with it. I had no problem with any of the dwarves at dinner or any of this stuff that people keep bringing up as being sort of inconsequential. The Galadriel stuff, I thought that was great. They needed a woman in that movie at some point.
This is true.
Otherwise, it's just a big old dwarf sausage fest.
I really like that you just said, I had no problem with any of the dwarves at dinner. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that sentence.
Well, you know, I don't get to say that very often.
I know, it's not every day.
And yet, it does feel kind of familiar. I definitely agree with that. Like, I kind of wondered if I wasn't watching it in high frame rate, whether I would have been so blown away. Like, the high frame rate is like the star to some degree of the film for me.
Yeah.
Because,
and it's too bad that it's only going to be around for like 2 or 3 weeks in
really?
Very limited theaters.
Yeah.
Where'd you see it, Leighton?
I saw it at Lincoln Square.
Okay. That's probably
but they also have it at Kips Bay and Union Square, Regal.
Cool. In LA, they have it just about everywhere.
Really?
Yeah, I think they were putting it into something like 100 screens, maybe like around there, and like 20 of them are in L.A.
Wow.
I know that in L.A. people are more interested in this like nerdy movie shit than like
yeah, I totally
in
get
Topeka,
that.
You know. So I was like very aware of the high frame rate the whole time. I didn't settle in to some degree, but I thought that was a good thing. That was, like, to the benefit of the movie. It's like in a good 3D movie, you're constantly aware that you're watching a 3D movie because it's being used so well. Like, the depth is so deep and everything, yeah. like, is framed so beautifully. You know, I thought that the high frame rate absolutely had that same effect here. So, yeah, and I thought Martin Freeman was great. I thought Richard Armitage Thorin Oakenshield?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he was terrific. I thought the fact that they made me care about nearly all of the dwarves despite very little screen time for a lot of them. Like, I don't know any of their names other than the main one. I know there's like a Keely and Peely. There's like a
Fillin and Chillin or something.
Bumble.
There's like a rhyming pair. I don't know their names, but I did care. You know, like when I was sitting there, I honestly thought during that scene where the little hyena guys that the orcs ride. You know who I'm talking
Nazgul?
About?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the names of these things. I'm not like I'm not into
the Nazgul.
Yeah, Nazguls. Okay, they look like the dirty hyenas that the orcs ride. I honestly thought we were gonna lose like one or two of the dwarves in that sequence, and to be honest, I was sitting there going like, not that one. Like there's like that one dude with the long hair. Well, I guess they all have long hair, but there was that one dude with kind of long hair who looked sort of young. And he seemed to be, like, sliding down that little chute last. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, a shot of him, and he's, like, coming last, and Thorin Oakenshield goes in before him. I'm sitting there going, like, oh, man, if they go, like, hey, where's Floral or whatever, then I'm going to be pissed because I liked that dude, kind of. So, I don't know. I thought it was great. I thought it was great, and I don't see why everyone's so angry about the high frame rate. Anything else?
So, oh.
Did you want to add something, Lee?
I was going to give my kernel rating.
Please do.
I think, for me, I would... You know, it has a special technical achievements, but I still... I don't know if... and maybe if I see all the movies together, it would work a little bit better for me, because I just don't feel... I don't feel the story is complete even as one movie. It's like part one, and you need to get part two immediately in order to really judge it fully. But for me, this is going to be a 2.5 stars for me.
Marcus?
I am going to give it 3.5. I really liked it. I'm a nerd, so, you know, I grew up on Tolkien.
People always say nerd like it's...
Read the book. I enjoyed the book.
See, I don't know the book at all. But I thought that Thorin Oakenshield and Frodo, Bilbo? It's one of them.
Bilbo Baggins.
Bilbo
Baggins.
I thought that Bilbo and Thorin Oakenshield both had very strong arcs that I could get down with. And I would say the movie by itself would be 3.5, but if you're seeing it in high frame rate, it's a full 4 kernel one for me. So that is The Hobbit for me. And let's go ahead... And let's play a little The Gross is Right.
Da, 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 na.
That was very lackluster. What did we do last week, Layton? Did we do The Hobbit?
We did do The Hobbit. You did 95. I did 105.
I feel like I'm pretty good on this one. What was the final?
Hold on one second.
I think it was under 100.
No. Weekend for a Hobbit was... Oh, 84. Yeah, you did well. Wow, no other movie made over 10 million. Oh. So 84, so you win.
84 means that I win. let's look at what we actually have this week. Did absolutely no research as to what was coming out this week. We have...
Let me pop that up for you. We've got...
Jack Reacher.
We got Jack Reacher on Friday.
Monsters, Inc. 3D. The Guilt Trip comes out on Wednesday. And This is 40.
What about Zero Dark 30?
That's going to be super, super limited release.
Is it?
Darn. Yeah, I think...
Five theaters.
I think... How many theaters?
Yeah, five theaters.
Five?
I'm seeing five theaters, yeah.
God damn, I'm going to have to buy my tickets in advance. All right, let's see here. So Monsters, Inc. opens Wednesday. Guilt Trip opens Wednesday. Jack Reacher opens Friday. This is 40.
This is 40 also opens Friday.
All right, well, let's go ahead and let's start with the movie that everybody's going to be talking about at the end of this week.
Hold on. Yeah.
Did we lose somebody?
Yeah, we lost Shira for a minute.
Shira?
We'll get her back. We'll get her back once she... yeah, she's... she probably just had to reboot or something. I'll try her again.
Hey, guys.
Oh, there she is. Perfect. So we're first talking about the biggest movie event of the winter, The Guilt Trip. Seth Rogen, bad. she's eating a steak. Everybody loves it.
I drove past
that steak place on the way to L.A., by the way, when I was going my D.C. to L.A.
Do they start in D.C.? No. They start in L.A., right?
Huh?
They start in L.A., right, in the movie?
Maybe they go east?
I thought they were going west from Florida.
I thought they were going west, too. I wondered whether they were doing the same trek that I took.
I'm looking it up.
I think I went on the guilt trip.
I go on the guilt trip every time I go home.
Every time I visit my mother.
Every time.
So let's see. I won. So I'm going to go second late, and I'm going to make you have the burden of guessing first.
Guilt trip? I'm willing to go 7 million here.
Ouch.
7?
Stings the nostrils.
But in a good way. let's see. It's opening on Wednesday. I'm gonna go to 10. I'm gonna go to 10. If it can't pull 10 mil in 5 days, then come on, Babs, step your game up. Shira, for you.
Yeah, I was gonna say 10, but I'll bump it up another million. I'll say 11. I agree for the same reason. If they can't do that in 5 days, then dear Lord.
Come on, Babs. Marcus, what about for you? Opening weekend for Guilt Trip.
Opening weekend for a Seth Rogen, Barbara Streisand movie. I'm going to say, God, 8 million? Because I don't know. I don't know what Seth Rogen's really been in.
I think the only movie he's been in really this year is Take This Waltz, right? Take This Waltz.
So I've got the high. I feel pretty good about that.
No, like... Shira is the high. Well, yeah, okay. Between me and you, yeah.
But yeah, I don't count until next year.
Yeah. That'll only be in a couple episodes.
Yep.
Then it'll be on. I feel
have I won
this year? I feel like I've probably come pretty close. If I haven't closed it off yet, I feel like I've probably come close.
You probably did, yeah.
Yeah, you probably clinched it.
All right, good deal. Monsters, Inc. 3D. Leighton, let's start with you.
I'm going to go 7. You know what? I'm going to go 18 million here.
18 million? I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to go 15 million.
What's this?
Monsters Inc. 3D.
Oh, Monsters Inc. That's right.
That's the old Pixar movie.
Yes, I'm familiar. Thank you.
All right, just.
It's a good movie. You should see it.
Yeah, I was thinking about checking it out, really.
Mike Wazowski. That's what he says in the movie.
Some people think you look like Boo. So.
They think you look like Boo. That'd be a great Halloween costume for you.
Yeah, you know, for all the pedos out there.
Put up pigtails and wear like a big...
They'd really enjoy that. Whatever.
Yeah, then you could get Leighton to be your Sully.
Oh, he'd be such a good Sully. I would have to call him Kitty.
Yeah, you could call him Kitty. Yeah, I bet
this is getting real weird.
I bet you would. Oh. All
right. Whose turn is it?
It's your turn.
It's yours.
Oh, 13 million.
All right, Marcus?
Well, since most parents are going to have their kids out of school on Friday, God, I'm going to go 20.
Are you sure that most parents aren't going to take their kid to see Tom Cruise in Jack Reacher?
Got a real scientist on our hands here.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I know my kid's out of school and he's already talked about it, so I will have to go 20.
That's like insider trading.
Yeah, totally.
You have the inside track right now.
Good call. I'm afraid by not being a teacher anymore that I'm going to be out of touch. I think I racked
up. What are the kids talking about?
Huh?
You know, candy, presents, you know, maybe present exchange.
Sure.
You know, stuff like that. Santa Claus.
This became such a weird conversation at some point. I feel like I'm in the middle of a Beckett play or something. Tom Cruise, Jack Reacher.
Yes.
AKA the best movie ever made. Leighton, what are you thinking?
$40 million.
He's putting his faith in old Cruise Dog.
Love him.
So am I.
I'm probably there Friday night.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm going to be at the first screening on Friday morning. I'm going to be there.
Absolutely.
I might go Thursday night since I'm calling in to work on Friday.
Oh, call out. Call out. This is a Tom Cruise movie. I actually think it's going to do a significant amount less than $40 million, sadly. But I'm going to just bump my guess up to $34 million. Why not? $34 million. I think it'll do less than that, but it seems like a good guess to keep Leighton out of the point here. Shira.
I'm going $45
million. Ooh,
and I'm going to tell you that it's because, you know, people are coming off Skyfall. They're like in an action-y kind of mood. And Tom Cruise rules. And it was filmed in Pittsburgh, so the whole city's going to go see it.
If there's one thing that the country really wants after a bunch of school children have been gunned down, it's to watch Tom Cruise people down.
What? Absolutely nothing is funny about that. But what's interesting about that is Tom Cruise and some of the cast were scheduled to appear a couple of days ago at one of the theaters in Pittsburgh, and they canceled for that exact reason.
They just canceled Django Unchained for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The premiere.
So I guess I didn't really think about that, Russell, but I'm still saying $45 million.
I feel like the Django premiere canceling is – that's like a period piece, kind
of. Yeah, but it's also Quentin Tarantino. You know there's going to be lots of gunplay in that movie.
Don't get me wrong. The whole trailer is centered around guns.
Yeah, did you see the Red Band trailer?
Yes.
The Red Band trailer actually makes me like a little nervous. I was kind of like getting maybe excited about it a little bit, even with my like trepidation about the subject matter. But the reviews were making me excited. But all the Red Band stuff just sort of seemed very bland shoot 'em up.
It was. I think it was just blood just for blood value.
Yeah, lots of like slow mo. It was like a poorly shot Zack Snyder scene.
It was like high velocity blood spatter.
I don't know, but I'm sure that it was just a misrepresentation. They wouldn't put like the big final battle in the trailer, one would hope. So hopefully there's
it is 2012. Battle. They could do that.
Yeah, I guess. Marcus, what are you thinking? Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher, you know, he's kind of had a rough year. I'm going to go the low side. I'm going to go 32.
Yeah, I mean, I would realistically go closer to 28 or 30. By saying that it's going to go like 40, 45, that means it has a very real shot at like breaking 100 mil at the box office. And I'm not convinced that Jack Reacher is going to make that happen, sadly. I wish it would. My boy.
Wait, you don't think Jack Reacher's going to make 100 million?
I think there is no chance that it makes 100 million at the box office.
Night and Day made 100 million, didn't it?
I don't think it did. I think it made close.
Night and Day made 117, actually.
Whoa. Inside info. Did your kids tell you that?
Yeah, he did. He just texted me.
Was that 117 domestic or worldwide?
I'm sorry. Worldwide, it did. I'm looking online. I'm cheating. 262 worldwide, which I didn't think it was all that great. Sorry.
Night and Day did do 117. I still think that Reacher is going to fall short of 100 mil at the old box office.
That will be very rare for Tom Cruise, I believe.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that many ads on TV for this.
For Jack Reacher?
Yeah, have you?
Oh my god, I've seen tons.
I haven't seen any since last Friday.
I've been watching TNT a lot, to be fair.
They know drama.
Russell, you don't even have cable. What are you talking about?
I do have cable. I
don't have cable. I mean, I have like no movie channels. I have like cable to have TNT, but
they know drama.
They do.
Yeah, they know it. They know it.
I've seen the ads all around LA. I do know that like people know the character of Jack Reacher. people definitely know the books. Like, I've had multiple people who know that I'm, like, a movie person come up to me and go, like, so what do you think of that Jack Reacher thing with Tom Cruise? You don't think he's right for the part, do you? People are
because
all
he's not 6 foot seven or whatever?
Yeah, people are all upset about that. I think they'll still see it, but I just don't know whether the old ladies who liked the books are going to show up for the movie.
Who would you have put in this place?
I mean, I agree. There's no one that you'd put in his place that would make anywhere close to the amount of money that Tom Cruise is going to bring in.
Exactly.
But maybe, what's his name? Oh, Sam Worthington? Couldn't have toughened him up a little bit?
No. Oh, he sucks, dude.
I can't with him. Yeah, I really can't. I mean, Chris Hemsworth.
No, I can't either.
I mean, Chris Hemsworth would get ladies in the theater, but he doesn't have the box office draw of T. Cruise.
Well, the closest I would have said, which I think I might have said on a previous episode, was The Rock.
The Rock does sell tickets.
Not
he
like
sells
Cruise
tickets.
I thought The Tooth Fairy was one of the funniest movies.
I did like.
I love that movie.
Really?
Yes.
I guess we'll find out when G.I. Joe finally comes out.
Yeah, next June, is it?
Did no, March.
It to June?
It's March. Yes.
It was supposed to come out this June, but they didn't.
Yeah,
it was supposed to come out the same weekend as Magic Mike, and that's too much Tatum even for America.
I'm still hung up on the fact
that that's actually why they're retooling the movie. They need more Tatum in the movie.
And I believe
plus,
that.
Killing off one of their main characters wasn't the smartest thing in the world.
Yeah, didn't they have to totally rewrite it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The audiences were pissed when they learned that Chan Tatum died in the first scene of the movie.
G.I. Joe is my favorite cartoon of all time, so yes, I was very pissed off.
Yeah.
All right, so are we losing Russell?
No, I'm still here. I'm still hung up on the Tooth Fairy.
He's still trying to figure out why I like the Tooth Fairy. That's really what you're thinking about, isn't it?
That is.
It gave him a brain freeze. He couldn't handle it.
I'm sorry, but he's another one who can do no wrong.
I only saw the last, like, 20 minutes, to be fair.
Give it a shot.
But all I saw was Billy Crystal doing some shtick. Some classic Billy-isms.
Which is always a nightmare. At least he wasn't in blackface.
Billy, like, you know, like, Dwayne the Rock Johnson looks up and he sees, like, Billy in the crowd, like, throwing popcorn, go, you don't know what you're doing. And then he, like, winks at Dwayne the Rock Johnson and disappears or whatever. I don't know. That's all I remember from it. And Julia, what's her name?
I believe it's Ashley Judd.
No, the fucking old woman who was Mary Poppins. Julie Andrews.
Oh, yes. God, I forgot she was in that movie.
I was going to say Julia
right.
Roberts.
She's like the master of the tooth fairies or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The madam.
She's the queen fairy or something.
She's the madam of that tooth fairy whorehouse she's running.
And her whole purpose, it seems, from like the 20 minutes I saw, is to like when Billy Crystal does some shtick, they cut to her and she like rolls her eyes.
Such a hater, Russell.
No, I love me some Julie Andrews, but... And I actually love Billy Crystal, but not in something like this. I don't know. Maybe I'll see it.
Give it a try.
I do love me some Dwayne the Rock Johnson. And then finally, This is 40. I really think that they missed out on a marketing tie-in opportunity. They could have gotten some good malt beverages and labeled them This is a 40. I'm glad I got one laugh out of that.
It's cheesy,
trying.
But that's
so
pretty
how long have you been sitting on that one, Russell?
I've been
the whole
on
episode?
All day. I felt
pretty good. No, he wrote it down 5 weeks ago. He's been waiting.
No, I came up with that one today, and I thought about tweeting it to Judd. That's how good I felt about it.
Oh, but, that's beautiful.
But then I thought what would be even better is if I was any good at Photoshop, having a picture of me with a 40 in my hand and then changing it to have like the This is 40 font like on it.
Like old English font?
Yeah. No, the it would like I, it would
the font
have
they
the
use on a poster
for This is 40.
Oh, got it.
And then old English, and then it would have like Maude Apatow's face on it. So the joke got too big for me to like want to do anything with it. Do you ever have that happen where you have like an idea and then you're like, it'd be funnier if it was this. It'd be funnier if it was this. Ah, fuck it. I don't know. Is that just me?
All
right.
No, it's not just you. I do it all the time, but only in my head.
No, fair. So you just don't want to admit to it. I'm burying my soul here, Shira.
No, actually, that's not true. I usually end up hating it. Who am I kidding?
Shira's been on a roll with her tweets recently, by the way. I just want to say that.
Who, me?
You. Yeah.
Thank you, Russell. I'm trying to churn out some quality.
You are indeed. This is 40, Leighton.
I think the marketing effort where they're trying to relate it to as a sort of sequel to Knocked Up, they recently started doing that because there was such low buzz on this movie and low interest in this movie. But I don't think that it's going to help that much. I don't think this movie is going to do very well.
But it has Paul Rudd.
Yeah, exactly.
Paul Rudd is
he's got every vagina in the theater this weekend.
Paul Rudd is not a leading actor. He is, or if he's a leading actor, he's just the boring straight guy. He should not be the one telling the jokes. I see this movie doing $11 million.
First of all, I disagree. I don't want him as my straight guy. I want him telling jokes. I also disagree that they only started doing the Knocked Up tie-in, because wasn't the first trailer they had like...
This is everyone's story.
Huh?
They got rid of the This Is Everyone's Story marketing.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Oh, I remember them talking about Knocked Up from the start, though, at least I thought. Yeah,
me too.
But I also remember the This Is Everyone's Story part.
Yeah. Because I made such a big deal about it. I'm going to go 16. 16. It'll get some people in there. Funny, yeah. I mean, Funny People was the last one, and that couldn't have done worse than 16 opening weekend. So, I don't know. 16, that feels good. Shira.
I'm going higher. I'm going 20 million. Every single person that I know is going to see this movie this weekend.
I'm going to see it on Christmas Day.
The only people that you know, Shira, are New York liberal Jew communist homosexuals.
Exactly, and it's Christmas. What better time to go see this movie?
Wait, you guys aren't going to go see Les Mis then?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely am going to go. I mean, you have to understand, on Christmas Day, I'll be there from sunup to sundown.
You only see two movies. You're only going to see two movies. You're only going to see Django and Les Mis because that's 5 hours in the theater already.
Oh, that's six hours in the theater.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's what I'm doing.
Funny People opened 22 million.
22 yeah, million. Yeah. So I like 16. 16 feels right for me. So Shira
and he's
said 20.
About dating. What about the film?
Marcus.
Well, I'll go 19.
Hey, 19.
Yeah.
Good deal. Is that what your children told you?
One child, not multiple, but yes.
He meant the collective children.
The royal children. Right.
Just sounds creepy, guys.
Just cut them
this episode has a little bit of a creep factor.
Children.
I kind of like it.
All right. Well, wonderful. That is how we play The Gross is Right.
Da, 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 da.
All right, that was better. That's all we have for this week. Next week, the reason why we're cutting this one short, first of all, is that I couldn't think of seven things that rhymed with Hobbit. And second of all...
You could have done seven plays on 40, I'm sure.
I'll save those types of things for next week.
Okay.
Next week, not only do we have a lot of... movies to review, and hopefully we'll have some good guests. But the week after that, we are going to be dropping our top 10 lists, and we're going to have our guests.
Russell, just to be clear, we're not going to release an episode on Tuesday, right? Which is Christmas. We're going to probably do Thursday of next week. We're going to probably record on Wednesday.
So we can include the Christmas days?
Yes.
Well, what I was thinking is that we could do, because, I mean, I don't know that we're going to want to add Les Mis and Django conversations to conversations about This Is 40 and
Jack Reacher.
Okay, so we could record on, like, Sunday night or something.
Yeah, I figured we'd do one on Sunday, then we do... we would do one like Thursday, or something like that. I don't really know what days of the week are important holidays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a calendar in my head.
There will be two episodes probably dropping next week.
Yeah,
correct.
In those days, yes.
As a special Christmas gift to you.
That's right.
God bless everyone.
And then get rid of that crutch, Tiny Tim, because we're going to have a two-part top 10 list extravaganza with Mr. Leighton Gordon, Ms. Shira Selkovitz, and myself. And then we will have, after the new year, a bonus episode in which all of our guests, including Mr. Marcus Strickland, we will have them record their top 10 lists. I will piece those all together, and you will get to have a special bonus episode in which you get to find out what everyone who has ever been on the show liked this year.
Like, what more could you ask for? That you couldn't even make a wish list that good.
That's pretty damn good.
We're doing this because children with cancer demanded it.
Yes.
Two episodes next week, a two-part top 10 extravaganza after, and then our piece together beautiful hodgepodge episode, and then maybe that one will take the place of, you know, some episode about isn't a haunted house the only thing for the first weekend of January?
We got parental guidance. We got parental guidance, the Billy Crystal.
A parental guidance, a haunted house twofer right there. Jesus Christ.
That's bad.
That is not bringing in the new year right. So we'll figure out something with that, but we're going to have a lot of extra special stuff. Please leave us iTunes reviews. We would love to have in our Christmas stocking some feedback from you guys. This has been the first year of our show. In fact, is this episode 50?
It is episode...
Am I close?
I'm not quite sure what episode we're on. It could be episode 50.
It couldn't be? Or it could be?
Do you want it to be?
Well, now that I've mentioned it,
don't you kind of wish it was episode 40?
I'm looking it up right now.
This is episode 48.
Oh, God damn it.
That sucks. That's not going to work.
I was pretty certain. I felt pretty good about it. Oh, well. You live and learn.
Our first episode was like in the second week of January, so it would probably line up that way.
Yeah. All right. I guess you're right. The point being that before we hit episode 50, if it's not today, God damn it, then before episode 50, I'd love to have some more iTunes reviews. I'd love to have some good retweets. I'd love to have some new Twitter followers for Long and Late Movie Show on Twitter, more Tumblr followers. We're trying to get ourselves out there. We're trying to make us your number one movie podcast. If you like the show, please spread the word along with your Christmas cheer. Because yes, that is the only way that people are going to find out about us. We have given you one show per week all year long. We're going to continue to do it next year. We're going to give you some bonus episodes at the end of the year just to bribe you. So please give us some love.
The best way to spread Christmas cheer is playing the Long and Late Movie Show loud for all to hear.
Yes.
She nailed it.
And,
yes. Nailed it.
And Cheer is an expert on Christmas, right?
And yes, I'm an expert on Christmas. And don't forget about the Long and Late Movie Show 5,000 follower prize, people.
You know what's funny is we passed 5,000 followers, but none of our new followers have mentioned it.
Nobody wants it. That's sad.
If you are someone who is clearly after 5,000 followers, so like Tyler Crosby, you don't count. You know, Grizzius, you don't count. But although, shout out to Grizzius. We do have a new Christmas Long and Late Movie Show logo. Thank you to Grizzius for that.
Thank you, Grizzius.
Y'all are not after 5,000th follower. You know, we need a new follower. They can win a picture of She-Ra for Christmas.
It's a solid gift, you guys.
Or a picture of She-Ra for Hanukkah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be for a specific holiday. Anything else to add before we get to the plugs at the end of the show here, gang?
I think we're good. Let's plug people's butts.
Let's do so. Shira, you weren't here last week when our listener Tyler, who did end up beating me, by the way, Leighton, in the fantasy football game. It got close, but I was still heartbroken. Tyler said that you're the best butt plugger of them all, Shira.
Thank you, Tyler.
So
I need more comments like that, people.
Oh, All the good people at LinkedIn don't know how to warm your heart yet.
Exactly what that means, by the way.
Yes. Leighton. No, let's start. Well, we usually start with Marcus. We start with the guests. Marcus, do you have anything to plug for us, sir?
I do not. Just my Twitter, Marcus the Token.
You had a film that you were sending out onto the old festival circuit, yeah?
Yes, we didn't get in a Sundance. Got a nice little letter from them, but we did not get in. But we have it out to a bunch of other film festivals, so we'll see.
What is your? Can you divulge what your film is called so that we can keep track of it for those of us who are interested?
It is called The Last Dance, and it's a love story. It's a short film. It's about 28 minutes, which I don't really know how that classifies as a short film, but it's short. And so, yeah, it's out there. It's not viewable anywhere, but it is out there, in the mail and on people's desks to get into film festivals.
Awesome. Well, good luck with it. I hope it gets in.
Thank you very much.
I definitely, that reminds me, I want to give a shout out to Tyler Ross, a good friend of mine, who a movie, a feature, so it wouldn't have taken The Last Dance's place, but he is the star of a feature that got into Sundance.
Congratulations.
Oh, that's great.
So shout out to him. I don't know whether he would actually listen to this show, but he's making a good career for himself. Shira, plug away.
No Mendoza plugs for the rest of 2012, but we do have a show coming up in New York City on January 15th at the Triple Crown Theater. Please come out to see us at 9:30 p.m. And we are going to have big things and big shows coming in 2013, so stay tuned for some improv goodness. And please follow me on Twitter at Shira Selko.
Can also say that I have seen Shira perform, and it's fantastic. So if you get a chance to go see it, see it.
That's right. Thanks, Marcus.
You're welcome.
Now I'm the only one on the show that hasn't gotten a chance to see Shira perform yet.
It's really sad. Maybe I'll have to come. We'll have to come out to UCBLA and do a set.
I would love that.
Shira, is your Elf on the Shelf video skit?
Thank you for bringing that up, Leighton. We actually had to do some editing. We had a couple of jokes that turned out to be in poor taste after the recent tragedy. So we're re-editing it, and we will have it released most likely by Friday. So stay tuned for some Elf on the Shelf hilarity.
So now the ending of your Elf on the Shelf sketch takes place in Chinatown?
Correct.
It's a good gangster squad joke for those of you out there. All right.
I'm excited to see that movie, by the way.
That's the worst thing about tragedies after the loss of life. Obviously, that obviously is the first thing that is terrible about them. But the second thing is that it does create sort of a sort of taboo.
Yeah.
Things like
it,
that.
It becomes very difficult to you sort of second guess everything you say and do, and
right.
It's hard in comedy, especially because everybody likes to attack that.
It's just a big old wet blanket.
What's that?
The tragedies are a big old wet blanket.
Yeah, they're terrible. They ruin everything.
I think I'm not going to go out on a limb here, but I think I speak for most people when I say that tragedies are bad. And no one likes
yeah, them. I think the general consensus would be that they're awful, yeah.
All right. Leighton, work in the Lagers, a.k.a. the Screaming Legion, follow you?
So you can reach me on Twitter, Leighton Gordon, LateGordon, LeightonGordon.blogspot.com. And apparently on Letterpress, I've had some people who, if you want an easy victory against someone, you can apparently reach out to me on iOS Game Center to beat me in Letterpress, LateGordon. So we've got Nathan Van Kirk, Keith Campbell, Russell, you're beating me also, Tyler, and Rory Holderness. They're all having easy victories against me in Letterpress concurrently. So it's been a rough week for me. And if I'm not responding as quickly as you think on Letterpress, it's because I'm actually trying to think my way around a word. It's been a brutal week for me on Letterpress.
Leighton, if it makes you feel any better, I am absolutely destroying Keith. So I'm avenging your losses to Keith. So
okay.
I apologize, Keith. This kind of stuff is my bread and butter. But
you are coming out with some incredible words, by the way. When you came up with riboflavins, I was like, what the hell?
Well, yeah, that one was because I saw flavor, and then I just was like, okay, before I push play, let me see what I can see how I can expand this joint. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/franklongo. Shout out to our wonderful frequent guest, Rob Fee, who I got to have a delightful lunch with this week.
Oh, how nice.
It was so nice, and I met some lovely new human beings, hopefully that we'll have on the show sometime soon.
That
did you meet Rob Fee's kid? Did he drive
I did not.
Rob over there?
I did not. Rob and I went to a place called the Border Grill where I had a cucumber jalapeno margarita.
Oh, my God. Yum.
That sounds delicious.
It was wonderfully complex.
Just like you.
Twitter.com/Frank Longo, Twitter.com/RussellHFilm for movie talk. I should mention I'm going to start writing soon for a website that is about to launch called The Movie Mezzanine. You can find them on Twitter at Movie Mezzanine. I don't remember how to spell mezzanine off the top of my head.
Mezzanine. Yeah, exactly.
Mezzanine. Right. Sure. So, yeah, follow them as well. The password is Swordfish is my blog. I'm also on Letterboxd. Russell H. Film, Leighton and Shira are on Letterboxd. I'm a big advocate for that site. You can probably figure out what many of our top tens are just by checking out our rankings on Letterboxd throughout the year. Letterpress, I'm also I'm Frank Longo. Letterpress, I'm Frank Longo, so find me there as well. On Twitter, the Long and Late Movie Show is L&L Movie Show. We are on iTunes, Long and Late Movie Show. We are on Stitcher Radio, Long and Late Movie Show. We are on Tumblr, longandlatemovieshow.tumblr.com. Please leave us your reviews, people. It would mean so much. Hashtag First Bag Movie. Hashtag Triscuits.
Hashtag Whole Grain.
5,000 follower. Hashtag Picture of She-Ra. Hashtag Riboflavins. I think that's all for this episode. I think our plugs and what have you lasted a good 15, 20 minutes. anything else to add before we take off, people?
No, that's
about it.
See you guys soon.
All right. So for She-Ra, for Leighton, for Marcus, for Triscuits, and for myself, Russell Hainlein, this has been the Long and Late Movie Show. Good night and well done, Bang Johnny.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Ice Cube's a pimp.
No, those are balls.
That was adorable.
Mahalo, motherfuckers.
I will plug your butt.